President Trump has been accused of being too close with the Russians, even though we know that, for the most part, his advisors, his cabinet, are very pro-NATO. But do you think that at this particular time, especially since Canada is not spending 2%, it'll be even more important for Canada to step up military obligations because the global order that we're entering is increasingly precarious, it's uncertain? You should have you.
So let me, two things about Trump. If you go on the web, go to the website of the Canadian CDA, Canadian Defense Association, they have a speech made by General Mattis, the new Secretary of Defense, a few years ago at a meeting in Ottawa. It is the most remarkable, constructive, and he's the former Supreme Commander of NATO, Supreme Military Commander of NATO. So understand, Trump's senior defense official is a former Supreme Commander of NATO who gets it. And when you listen to that speech, you'll see how. And he also has Manitoba roots, his Canadian back. It's all good. So I think I think President Trump will find out in greater detail as he gets more briefings is that while America carries the strongest burden within NATO, it can't do the job alone without NATO. So it needs NATO. It needs a more robust NATO. And there is nothing Canada could do, if I were to have a chance to advise the Prime Minister, which is highly unlikely, before he meets with President Trump. I would have him indicate two things. One, we need more U.S.-Canada cooperation in the Arctic. We should be doing joint Canada-U.S. patrols, environmental patrols, Northwest Passage, so that the Russians understand that North American defense extends up there and it's part of our mission. And we need a more robust presence in Eastern Europe. So we should go back to the battle group plan, and we should be probably looking to pre-locate forward assets, both air and sea and land, in our NATO colleagues' countries, so that the Russians understand that the minute they decide to cross one of those borders, they'll be up against the French and the Germans and the Canadians and the Americans, not just the Latvians, who will do a great job. By the way, are spending well more than 2% on their own defense. You know, our Eastern European colleagues have stepped up in a big way. We have a duty to stand by them. They chose democracy. They chose to join the EU, most of them. They have chosen to become part of NATO. The Article 5 elements of that treaty are real, and we have to ask ourselves every day, are we doing everything we can to be ready for an Article 5 requirement? And unless we do that, we're not doing our job, and we're leaving Canada exposed. There are many Canadians who live in those countries. Most of those countries have robust ethnic communities, expats and others, multi-generational here, who are part of our texture as a society. And it's really, really important that we do not turn our back on that or think that we can get away on the cheap, because we can't. And any time you try to underspend before hostilities, you end up inviting greater hostilities and much greater loss once they break out. And the issue is, how do you prevent them from happening to begin with? That's the most important task.
One of the final things I'd like to touch upon, just to get it in there, is the changing political landscape in Europe. And there are far-right parties that are gaining more and more support, and many of them, especially if you look at the Front National in France or the Party for Freedom in the Netherlands, are anti-NATO, Eurosceptic, sort of pro-Russia, especially because they receive a lot of funding from Russia. How can Canada be prepared in case this were to happen, if these parties were to get elected and NATO's future would be a bit more uncertain?
So let's remember that in the history of NATO, the French have always been a little bit the British would call wobbly. De Gaulle kicked NATO headquarters out of Paris, which is why it went to Brussels. De Gaulle wanted to maintain a separate force de frappe, which was a separate French nuclear force, because of independence and sovereignty. But I don't think anybody ever doubted that in the event the balloon went up with the Russians, where the French would be. So therefore, whether the Netherlands elects a far-right government that doesn't want to continue Netherlands' relatively robust engagement with NATO, or whether Marie Le Pen, which I don't think will happen, I think there'll be another conservative, it won't be her, and it'll be somebody who believes in NATO, ends up being elected in France, but even if she is, in the end, her strategic context in terms of French economic and commercial interests around the world are opposed to Russian strategic and global linkages and networks. And they and her interests will be European, and they will be with strong sovereign allies like the United Kingdom, Germany, and the United States. So if NATO didn't exist today, if somebody snapped their fingers and it disappeared, the first thing that would happen is a series of meetings between countries to figure out how to create NATO. They might call it something else, but the notion of having an alliance against the Russians so the Russians don't do anything silly. And you can deal with the Russians through a measure of respect because they know you're not going to do anything unwise. And we know they are constrained from doing anything unwise, is the only way you can work with the Russians in a host of ways that can, in some ways, be constructive. And we had an event here last night with a young principal dancer of the National Ballet School. She's a young woman in her early 20s. Came here from Russia at the age of 4. Her father was a physicist, and there was a joint, this was in the Yeltsin days, a joint agreement between the University of Toronto and the University of Moscow to exchange physicists to work together on research projects. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And we need to be doing more of that, but the Russian government has to understand that we're not doing it from a position of weakness. So stand alone, stand together. Capacity alone, capacity together. The together option always makes the most sense.
So what can we, just a final question, what can we as everyday Canadians do to encourage our government to really focus on the important global issues of the day?
I would say three things are most important. First of all, it is very important that people who live in the 300 and whatever constituencies of our MPs have a robust relationship with their local member of parliament on these issues. There's a view in Ottawa, I know, I worked there in the Senate for about 9 years, that there's a constituency on military issues, and that constituency is made up of the military defense people, folks in the armed forces, folks in the reserves, and all the veterans. And that's all there is. No one else cares. Well, every time an MP can hear from a young person, or a high school class, or university students, or people at Rotary that they're concerned about national defense and they're concerned about it strengthens his or her ability to fight the battle in caucus and in cabinet on behalf of a more robust policy. And I would like to think that we are very fortunate in having, as a minister of national defense, a Canadian who served with great distinction in Afghanistan and Bosnia, who was an active member of the armed forces, Minister Sajjan, and was respected by all our allies as somebody who was extremely capable, competent, and tough guy. And his background is he was an undercover police officer in downtown Vancouver, where my suspicion is you've got to be a little tough. So he gets it. He knows what the experience is. He knows what the enemy in different parts of the world looks like. So the issue is how much support are we giving him as he fights for more money and more capacity around the cabinet table. And it's important that he not be alone. It's important that he not be the only person around the table making the case. So I'm very hopeful that my predecessor as chair of the NATO Association, the Honorable Bill Graham, who's the chair of the Defense Policy Review, which results should be out any day now, will, I don't know what he's going to say, I haven't seen it, but I expect, knowing Mr. Graham and the others on the committee with him, they're going to make a very strong case for an increased military capacity. So this will be a body that was appointed by Mr. Trudeau, headed by a former very distinguished Liberal foreign minister and Liberal defense minister, who when he was minister was in favor of Canada joining the anti-ballistic missile network of the United States. Plus he has distinguished civil servants, a former deputy secretary of the United Nations, all distinguished Canadians. This will have a huge impact. And I think we should be asking ourselves the same question that we asked when the NATO Association put forward, with your help, a tremendous brief for them to consider. What can we do to support the findings when they come out in a way that members of Parliament across Canada hear from people who care about those findings, if they are as I hope they'll be, actually being taken forward in some substantial fashion. We're going to have a deficit as a country for economic reasons for a while. The issue is, how do we deploy it? I think if Mr. Trump saw that we were deploying part of that deficit to ensure that we exceeded our 2% gross domestic product expenditure, he would say, those guys, they're doing their job. They pay fair wages. We have balanced trade. They're our most important allies. That's an important place for us to be. Whatever else we may agree or disagree with President Trump on, he is now the leader of the United States, and therefore he is the deemed leader for the next 4 years of the free world. We have to find a way to not only engage with him, but also let the Russians know that Canada is not backing off our concerns about Crimea, Ukraine, and freedom and democracy in Eastern Europe, and that he doesn't get to move the borders and act illegally without any price to be paid. And if we are fuzzy on that, we're just inviting trouble.
Important points, great arguments. Mr. Siegel, we're greatly honored to have had this opportunity to interview you. We always appreciate when people who have so much experience are always willing to share it, so thank you for that, Mr. Siegel.
Thanks for asking, and thanks for all the tremendous work you do on behalf of the NATO Association of Canada. We all appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.